So, I'm going to start off with a small Gemara in Yotzeim Beis Megillah, and then we're going to discuss Parshas Zachar. That's okay. So it says like this. So by the Luchos at Har Sinai, so Hashem gave Moshe these two tablets, and it says on the tablets, it says Kechol haDvarim Asher Dibar Hashem Imachan, like all the words that Hashem spoke with you. So what does it mean, like all the words? It should have said, it says on the tablets, the words which Hashem spoke at on Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments, was like all the words. So the Gemara says that it teaches you that besides for what was literally contained on the tablets, there were also other things which are conveyed to Moshe Rabbeinu at Har Sinai.
That's the Talmud, right?
Yeah. So it says, it breaks it down into three categories, okay? One thing it says, Malame, it says, Shehereyo Kodesh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Hashem showed Moshe Dukduke Torah. That's like deductions from the Torah itself. So what does that mean? Rashi says that means Ribuyim Esim Vegamim Miutim Achim Barachim. So there are certain times in the Torah where it writes a little extra word. It writes the word S. S is a word that doesn't really have any meaning. It's just a word put there. It's like it doesn't mean much. Or sometimes it writes the word also. Or ba, like there are certain phrases in the Torah which were written in a way that the Rabbanim learn out, they derive halachos from extra words in the Torah. Certain words are inclusive, including more halachos, or excluding certain things. The Torah was written in a way that it lends itself to a very detailed analysis, and every letter, every word has a right? So Gemara derives halachos from these words. But it's saying is, these are not made up by the Gemara, this is built into the Torah. When Hashem gave the Torah to Moshe, it was designed to derive these halachos from the text. So therefore it's saying that was also revealed to Moshe. It's not like a later idea. The rabbis just decided to add it. That was by design, and they're saying that Hashem revealed to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the first class. The second thing it says, Diktuke Sofram. The deductions of the rabbis, Rashi explains, it means that later generations derived from the Mishnayos, from the Mishnah. So the Mishnah was a codification of the oral law by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. He wrote down the Mishnah. And the Mishnah is very terse. And a lot of Gemaras spend time deducing, figuring out what did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi mean. He wrote it this way, he's here to teach you this, and all kinds of deductions in order to try to figure out what exactly the Mishnah meant. So it's saying, is that also is given to Moshe Rabbeinu? Okay, and that I think is your point. That's time. That basically, don't think that all the details of the halachic system were made up later. But on the contrary, that was also given to Moshe Rabbeinu, who passed down orally from generation to generation to generation. Eventually, it was codified and written down because they were going to forget it. It was supposed to be transmitted orally, but they were going to forget it. People were going to forget it with persecutions, and it had to be written down. And the way that the deductions which are made from the Mishnah are all by design in the Torah, that the halachic system lends itself to this Talmudic analysis of all the different laws, all that.
I don't know, what's the significance of like a word that we don't know what it means? Why is that significant?
Oh, well, it's not that word we don't know what it means, it's that certain times the word, it's like an extra word, which is alluding to some sort of inclusion. Like if you say in a contract, let's say you would put in the word all, like proceeds in the contract come to go to a so-and-so party, or all proceeds. You say, well, why do you write all? You didn't have to write all. Oh, all must be not only just the regular proceeds, but all proceeds are, you know. So like certain times there are words written in the Torah, which if a plain reader may not notice it, but a fine eye will notice, one second, that word is extra. They didn't have to write that word. Must be that the Torah was trying to convey something by those words. So every word in the Torah is measured. There's no extra words. But that was all revealed to Moshe. So that's all fine. So Moshe basically was revealed not only those deductions which are from the text of the Torah itself, but even those deductions which are part of the oral law as a whole, that's also part of what was revealed to Moshe. Fine. Now the third class is really the one which is very difficult. It says, and also was revealed to Moshe, Umasha Hasofram Asidin Lechadesh, that which the rabbis were in the future going to innovate. Okay? And what does that mean? It says, Mainihu Mikra Megillah. Okay? So the saying is, now Moshe Rabbeinu... What?
Warm in here or move?
No, I'm fine. That's fine. So now also Moshe Rabbeinu was shown the future, that which the Rabbanan are going to innovate in the future, namely Mikra Megillah. So Moshe Rabbeinu was shown the myth of Mikra Megillah. So to me, that's difficult. Because Mikra Megillah is reading the Megillah, the book of Esther, which is the story of Mordechai and Esther and Haman and Achashverosh. And it's a story which didn't happen yet at the time. So if you want to say that Hashem revealed to Moshe the laws of the Torah, fine, those are all built into the Torah. But Mikra Megillah is a mitzvah that the Rabbanan made up based upon the events which happened, and they saw these are great events, and we want to permanent make these laws, events permanent, and publicize them and all that. But that, what does this mean to say that Hashem revealed that to Moshe Rabbeinu? Unless you'll just say, well, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu the future. But then you can tell him everything in the future. Then it's just like, as the first two things aren't just that he told him the future, it's that this was, he told him the wealth of what Torah is. But to tell him something which is going to happen based on events which are going to happen in the future seems to me like an altogether different type of a claim.
And it was specific?
It was, so it says, it says things which they were going, I don't know, that's part of the question. It doesn't say it wasn't specific. Maybe it wasn't, but what's the point? And also, like, did Moshe Rabbeinu convey this? Like, was this just things Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu and he was a secret? Or did he convey this? Because other things Moshe Rabbeinu was given and he told them to future generations. I don't think anyone knew about Megillah before it happened. Otherwise, what's everyone all worried about? Don't you know what the Megillah says? So it's like, if he's just telling Moshe Rabbeinu what for his own private knowledge, what's the point of that? And if he's telling it to them, then he should pass it down. Well, it doesn't seem like anyone really knew about it. So, like, well, the whole thing sounds hard to understand. Right? It says, "Ma'idach siv ba'aleim kechol advar ma'asher divar Hashem imachem bahar." Okay.
That's
the pasuk in Dvar Tas, and on the Luchos it says all the words, all like all the words that Hashem spoke with you at the mountain. Melamed teaches Shaveru Kadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, Tiktukei Torah, V'Tiktukei Sofrim. Good? Okay. So let's leave that question. I'll come back to it later, okay? Okay. So, what I want to really take up directly is Parsha Zachar. Okay? So, Parsha Zachar is basically. Begins in a Mishnah in Megillah and Chavtas, and there are four parshas. There are 4 weeks in this time of year where we take out 2 Torahs, right, and Ma'alaining. We lay in the parsha of the week, but then in the Maftir we lay in an additional thing. So the first one was the Shkalim, where we read about them giving of shekel. Took a half a shekel from everyone and took that money, and that went towards the Karbanos on behalf of all the Jews. And that we read, they collected that money in Adar, beginning of Adar, because that was the last month of the year. And this money funded the Karbanos for the year. So basically, the new year starts in Nisan, in a month from now, basically, or whatever, the end of the month. So they collected it at this time of year. They started collecting for the new year's treasury. So therefore, it was like they set up this takana to read this maftir to announce to the people, hey, it's time to remind everybody, it's time to get ready to sacrifice the shekel. Fine. That's in the beginning of Adar. Then, this past week we read Parsha Zachar. Now, Parsha Zachar is the Parsha at the end of Kisei, which talks about remember, it's a command, it's a mitzvah to remember that which Amalek did us. When we were leaving Mitzrayim, we were strong, we were running away from Mitzrayim, the beginning of a new nation, all the nations of the world were afraid of us, we just destroyed Mitzrayim, and then Amalek came and attacked us. And tried to pick off our weak ones, and like kind of made us look weak in the eyes of the nations. And that was like they just came to destroy us. They couldn't handle the Jewish people. Philosophically, they were offended by our existence, and they tried to wipe us out. And
what was the timing of when that occurred?
Right on their way running out of Mitzrayim. Oh. They were leaving Mitzrayim before our Sinai even. So when they were traveling, So the thing is, so that is a mitzvah. Because of that event, there's a mitzvah, there's like the idea of Amalek is a nation which is committed to like their own human grandeur, and they have to wipe out the Jew, because the Jew and the idea of subordination to God is like a threat to their whole, you know, self-aggrandizement. So they have to wipe out the Jew. So the saying is, the mitzvah to remember that the Malik the Das, and the fact that there's always like a continual tension in the world between the power of the Malik and the Jew. And there's a mitzvah to always remember Amalek, never to forget their hatred, and to be ready to wipe them out. And I think the Rav Chaim, or the Rav said, maybe in the name of Rav Chaim, that Amalek is not a genealogy, but an ideology. So he said there's an ideology which is directly antithetical to the existence of the Jew, is not every enemy of ours is like this. But like he said, the Rav said that the Nazis, for example, are an example of Amalek. Where it's like the very existence of the Jew is intolerable to them, and they just have to wipe us out. And it's like they're into the self, the master race, and like that whole idea of humans are essential. And the idea of a Jew was like abhorrent to them, and they had to wipe them out. So there's an idea of like, there is always in history times where there are nations which emerge, Shamalik, and it's a mitzvah to always to hate them and to be ready to wipe them out. If we have the occasion to.
So it's not that like Hitler is a descendant of Amalek.
No, again, it's an ideology. Right. That's what the Rav held. Yeah.
That's funny. It's not a person who did this movement or something. No. Their religion plays any part.
Not necessarily. Right. Correct.
You might think that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's not an Avodah Zarah or something. Correct.
Right. They're attacking God sort of somehow.
Well, I think they're threatened, like you see by Haman, for example. He was into making himself great. And Mordecai, not bowing down to him, questions his whole theory that he's a superpower. So, and he knows that the Jew, Mordecai, is acting on behalf of the Jewish nation, which says that humans are just humans and we don't subordinate ourselves to any human. Ultimately, a God is the only true force in the universe. And that was a threat to Haman's own, you know.
Yeah, it seemed like kind of like Nazis, for example, it's hard to take that as an anti-religious thing.
Well, it's an anti-God thing, though, I think. Well, the question is the Jews. The question is what the Jews represent. But why is it they hate the Jews? What's so bad about the Jews?
And you'd say that clearly somehow that was...
The Jews, I'd say, is yeah, the Jews are the chosen people. The Jews are the people of the book. They're intellectuals. Okay. So it's a mitzvah of Parshas Zachar. Okay. So that's the parsha to read every year. We read from the Torah about the mitzvah to remember that we have to destroy Amalek. Remember what Amalek did to us, we have to destroy. Okay, so why do we do it this time of year? So Rashi says it's Lismoch Mechias Amalek v'Mechias Amalek. We want to juxtapose the destruction of Amalek with the destruction of Haman. Okay? We always do it the Shabbos before Purim. Okay? Shabbos before Purim, because we want to juxtapose those two. Okay? The destruction of Amalek, which is in Parshas Zachar, and the destruction of Haman, which is in Reading the Megillah. Okay. So we're going to try to understand that a little on a deeper level. What's the value of juxtaposing those two? Okay, but in doing so, we can take up a question. Okay. Well, the question the Gemara raises is, let's say Purim comes out on Friday. Okay? Okay, so now a relevant piece of information is that there are really 2 days of Purim. Okay, depending on where you live. For example, in Yerushalayim, we're celebrating, for example, this year on Thursday. Yerushalayim is celebrating on Friday. Okay, any city which was walled in the times of Yeshua ben Nun is reads on the 15th of Adar. Okay, basically, the miracle of Purim happened in 2 stages. There was the city of Shushan, which is the capital, and there was other cities. And the war we won in 2 stages. So in order, I think the full victory in Shushan happened on the next day. So basically, the way that the mitzvah was set up is that there are 2 days of reading of the Purim, depending on 2 types of cities, in order to publicize this. The 2 days of the miracle. So basically, most cities read on the 14th of Adar, and some cities read on the 15th. So if Purim comes out on Friday, okay, Rosh Hashanah is on Friday. Then that's the 14th is on Friday. Then in other cities like Yerushalayim, they read on Shabbos. Okay? Fine. We don't read on Shabbos because it's pushed off, whatever. But intrinsically, that's the primary halacha.
We don't read on Shabbos because
what? Because they may come to carry it. There's a wrong way to decree. Okay. And our calendar never works out on Shabbos. It's arranged to never work out on Shabbos. But when they did it based upon the moon, you know, when they set up Rosh Chodesh based upon the new moon, it could have turned out to be on Shabbos. Okay. So now what happens if Purim comes out on Friday? Okay, so it's Machlozi and Rav and Shmuel, when exactly you do Parshas Zachar. Rav says you do it on the Shabbos before. Because he says it's a principle that you always want to have the Zechira prior to the Asiyah. The remembering before the doing. Okay, Zachar, reading Parsha Zachar, is remembering about Amalek. And the Asiyah, Purim, celebrating Purim, is like the doing of celebrating the destruction of Amalek. Destruction of Amalek. Okay? So you want to first remember and then do. So therefore, when Purim comes out on Friday, if you would do Zachar on Shabbos, it's going to be too late. The Shabbos after. If you do Zachar on the Shabbos after Purim, then you already finished, you remembered, you already did it Purim, and then you remember afterwards, it's too late. So in order to make sure that the remembering takes place before the doing, so you read Parsha Zachar 65, 6 days before, whatever, the Shabbos before. Okay, 6 days before the Shabbos before. That seems reasonable. Shmuel argues, no. He says that you do it on the 15th. Okay? Do it on the 15th, Shabbos. But now you're doing the remembering, the doing of Purim before the remembering, right? Because we're celebrating Purim on the 14th. And then remembering on the 15th. So he says, no, because since you have the cities, the walled cities, they're going to be reading on the 15th. So it turns out you're doing the reading and the remembering together, both on Shabbos. Okay? I'll read that to you. So he says, this is in Lamed Amal Aleph Megillah. Purim Shechalos Be'erev Shabbos. Rav Amar Makdim Parsha Zachar. Rav says you read it early. Shabbos before, or Shmuel Amar Achim, you do the Shabbos after. Rav Amar Makdim, Kiyechidil Atik Demasil Zechira, because you don't want to do it before you remember it. Shmuel Amar Achim, Amar Lecha, even though you can book Kafim Davdi Bechameshar, since you have the walled cities that read it on the 15th, Asiyah Zechira, Bahadi Adadi Kasin, so you're doing the remembering it and the celebrating it simultaneously the same day. Okay? So what's the problem? What's the problem with Shmuel's position?
You're not having a remembrance precede the...
That is very good for the walled cities, but we don't live in walled cities. Most Jews don't live in walled cities. So while it's good that for them they're doing it at the same day, and it coincides, and you don't have a problem of reading it, you know, of celebrating before the reading, but what about for the rest of the Jewish people who are not in walled cities, who are celebrating on the 14th, and they are doing the celebrating before the reading? So what kind of answer is that the Shmuel is saying, oh, because they're the walled cities. Okay, but they're not everyone's walled cities. Most people aren't walled cities. Right? And anyways, we don't quite understand what's this whole thing. What's the sense of, you know, the reading before the remembering, you know, what is that? Remembering before the doing it. What's the logic of that? It's like, the world doesn't really explain that. It seems, it leaves that to be understood. So what's the... What is the understanding of that principle, which Rav seems to stay, that's what you always got to do, and therefore you always push it back. And then what is Shmuel? Shmuel doesn't reject the principle, he just seems to somehow think you could accomplish it because the 15ers are going to do it on the same day.
Well, I mean, I can see the principle of remembering, because that's like, that's reminding you of the danger to the Jewish nation of Amalek.
Right.
And therefore, it's important to destroy Amalek,
right,
which then happens
as the
second event.
Right, okay, good.
So I can understand that.
Yeah, right. You mean when you're celebrating Purim, it's like you're celebrating because you just remembered who Amalek is and how dangerous they are. And then when we celebrate Purim, we're thinking, oh, Purim. These are an embodiment of Amalek, and that's what we're celebrating and reading about, and that's part of our Purim. It enhances our Purim that we're happy about the destruction of Haman, because Haman's really Amalek. So first we remember Amalek in the abstract, and then we celebrate a particular instance of it. But if you do it afterwards, it's too late. It's like you already celebrated Purim. Now what are you going to do? You celebrated Purim and you didn't have anything about remembering Amalek. Now afterwards you're going to read about Amalek? Well, your Purim didn't have anything to do with Amalek. It's too late. Right?
I mean, obviously this Gemara with both Rab and Shmuel agree that they're related, but like, aren't they separate, like completely separate human?
Okay.
The mitzvah of Zechiras Amalek.
Right.
And, okay, so you hide to the, I guess, the creed out of the carcass like once a year, but like, isn't it just there's an idea of Zechiras Amalek? And it's always, but we read it once a year to, like, that's, I guess, the halakhim, but.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like it per se is intrinsically linked to Megillas Esther and Haman.
Okay.
And vice versa. And it would seem that, you know, this of reading Megillah and Purim is certainly not in whole Amalek. I mean, it's related again, but like, who says that they're tied other than this?
Okay. So therefore what?
Therefore, who cares?
Like, no one's saying who cares.
Right. No, I agree.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying, like, well, why is the Gemara tying? I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Question,
okay. Well, look. For example, going to this side, it's saying is that given that, and there is an idea. Part of Megillah is that you're remembering that it's an instance of Amalek. So the saying is that it's a valid, it's appropriate to be thinking about that on Purim. So.
But I guess my point is, like, you would anyway. But the Megillah.
No, it doesn't say anything about Amalek per se. The Megillah is just about Haman.
No, coming afterwards.
I guess, but this is a takana in order to bring it out. You know, there's a mitzvah of, you know, there is a mitzvah of Zachar remembering Amalek, and there's a value to nicking the connection. So that now when you're Purim, how is it that on Purim you think about Amalek? Oh, because we read Parshas Zachar. I mean, that's the official. I mean, the things we say afterwards are just like menhagim or whatever. But this is the halacha, which brings it out. And that's valuable because that's part of what you're celebrating on Purim. So it sets the stage.
It really drives home that whole idea that how dangerous a life is.
Right. It's an instance of it. So you remember them and then you say, oh, this is who we're wiping out.
I guess you could make the point that clearly one could interpret the whole series of events as different. Jews were in danger, they were saved, and Amalek is really a tangential part of it.
Yeah, right, it was Haman. Haman's one guy. What does he have to do with Amalek? He's just
right.
The guy.
He's Russia.
He's Russia. But that's what it's saying, is you would give a context by first reading the reading Zachar, Amalek. You say, Haman's not just a one-time event, a fluke, but he's part of a movement, and the movement is an eternal, ever threat, you know, continual threat to Jewish people. So you bring that out. Okay, good. So even Shmuel's not denying this in a certain sense. He's just saying as well, since the walled cities, you read it on the 15th, so we'll also be they're doing it at the same time. So our question is, it's very good for the walled cities, but how does it help us? We're not walled cities, and for us, we're doing Purim without Zohar. Right? Ask that the Ramban. It's like a famous question.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, it seems that it's like it's even though you're celebrating one day,
right?
And it's not the same group who does it on the separate day. It seems like it's still like a like
people still relate to both days. Like there's,
right.
I think like you can't test paid on both days even if you're in the other place. So like, in other words, it seems that it's a halakhic reality still that Mahila is being observed. So something that a person can relate to, something
Shmuel
is like.
Right, I understand. I mean, it still is. For us, Shushan Purim isn't just another day. It's true. But still, if I'll ask you, Bama, when we celebrate Purim, we don't know Zachar. You know what I mean? If the whole idea is that we do Zachar, and this way it enhances our celebration of Purim, so we're not celebrating Shushan Purim. So while it's true, yeah, sort of, whatever, but, you know. Right, how does it help us?
What's the question?
And those questions, what sense is there to say that we're going to read it on the 15th, do Zachar on the 15th? Because in the walled cities, they're celebrating Purim on the 15th. You know? Yeah, but we're not. We're celebrating on the 14th, and if you want to have Megillah, I mean, the Zachar before Megillah, how does it help us that the other cities are doing it at the same time? But we're not the other cities. We're these cities, and these cities, we're reading the Megillah, we're doing Purim first, and then we have the Zachar after.
Are the walled cities cities where people thought they were protected from the homophobes of the world?
Is that no, not necessarily.
What does it mean, the walled cities?
Well, cities, well, it's just saying is that at the time, Shushan was a walled city, it was a protected city. I mean, it was harder to defeat the walled cities. It took like an extra day because they were walled. So we won anyways, but like that was part of the miracle is that we were able to destroy even the walled cities, you know. So there's like an additional day of celebration for the wall. Those wall for walled cities, they celebrate on the next day. So this way, it's like the Jewish nation, the celebration is in two stages to reflect the two facets of the miracle.
Who were in the walled cities, though?
And your enemies of the Jews, yes?
Oh, the enemies, okay.
All right. So I ask you like this. We're trying to juxtapose Megillah and Zachar. Right? Megillah and remembering Amalek. So I'll ask you like this. Is what's that a function of? What's it a kiyum in? What's it a fulfillment in? Is it a function of my Purim? That I want to enhance my Purim by preceding it or juxtaposing it with Zachar? Or is it an enhancement of Zachar that I instantiate it, so to speak, by tying it to Megillah, a specific instance of Zachar. Okay? Am I enhancing my Megillah or am I enhancing my Zachar?
I would say it's the latter.
I would say it's both.
Okay. So I would say that's the very machlokas. Okay? See, if you say that it's enhancing my Purim, right? So then you have to put the Zachar first. Because how are you going to enhance your Purim if you do it after Purim? Purim's over. What are you going to do? You did Purim. You finished celebrating Purim. It's all over. And then tomorrow you're going to start talking about Zachar. Well, it's too late. You missed your chance. You missed the boat. Right? Purim is a specific day. If you want to enhance your Purim, so you can do it. Look, you can do it in the days leading up to Purim. There's an idea of preparing for Purim. Right? It's a celebratory day. It's a festive day. The week leading up to Purim, we feel the excitement in the air. Reading Zachar is part of our preparation for Purim. Fine. But like once Purim's done, well, then it's done. Right? So that's a rav hold. That's why you always have to make sure you do it before Purim. Right? Okay. But maybe Shmuel holds no. It's really a din in Zachar. Zachar means remember. But what do you remember? How do you remember Amalek? So what do? The Deoraisa is you read this parsha, which talks about what Amalek did to us when we left Mitzrayim. Now, that story, although it's the basis of the mitzvah, it's not very moving, at least emotionally, for sure. It's like, okay, they chased us after Mitzrayim, they attacked us. It doesn't sound so intense. We can't truly appreciate what Amalek is. At least certainly us, as simple people, can't. Maybe, you know, there, it conveys, it, within it, contained in it, is the kernel of Amalek and the evil and all that. But it's like the Parsha in the Torah is very short, very not so detailed, subtle. It's the basis, but at the same time, it doesn't talk to us in a deep way. The Megillah is a very thorough story. Haman is a very evil person. Haman is a very detailed story. The Sefer of the Megillah is a very detailed story, which tells us about the threat of Amalek. He was going to wipe out every single Jew. He almost did, and it was only through the salvation of Hashem that we ended up being saved. Right? Like, you could hate, for instance, in our day, you get the Nazis. You could appreciate evil when you see Nazis. You could appreciate evil also if you read about Haman. The further you go back, and not only, it's not only that it's further back, it's Haman, the story of the Megillah is elaborate. It's lengthy. It shows us the personality of Haman, who embodied Haman. Like, it shows us how upset he got when he had all the power in the world, because one Mordechai wouldn't bow down to him. He said, all my power is worth nothing to me every time I see Mordechai and he doesn't bow down to me. You see the depravity, the megalomania of what Amalek is, and you see that they wanted to destroy the Jewish people. That is something you can appreciate. So the juxtaposition of the Megillah to Amalek, to Zachar, is an enhancement of the appreciation of Zachar. See, Zachar isn't just your yotze, your filled mitzvah. Zachar is an internal appreciation of the evil and of the threat of Amalek and a call to arms and be ready, because there's always a potential in the world for Nazi Germany. There's always a potential in the world for evil, for Amalek. And you got to be ready to kill them, because if you don't kill them, they're going to kill you and they're going to wipe us off the earth. So it's a mitzvah that has to impact people. And Chazal saw that Amalek, Megillas Esther, is a fulfillment, brings the fulfillment of Zachar to a higher level. So therefore, you want to juxtapose Megillah to Zachar. Now, if that's the idea, then I would argue the order does not really matter. You want them to be juxtaposed, but the order per se doesn't matter. Because see, Zachar, and this is your point, Moshe, Zachar is not on a day. Zachar is a constant mitzvah. You always have to remember. Okay? Purim is a day. So on Purim, you have to think about it. Fine, but that's not Zachar. Zachar is constant. Now, you want to juxtapose the Yer Zachar to Megillah, so you want them to be near each other. But it doesn't matter whether you first do Zachar, and then say, hey, remember that? Remember? This is an instance. Or if you first talk about Megillah, Haman, they say, hey, Zachar, this is what I was telling you about. This is Amalek, this is the guys. You know, it goes either direction. Now, they have to be related, but not necessarily order. So, how are they related? So, they could be related in different ways. One way it is related is if you do Megillah, Zachar, in the time which is leading up to Purim, there's an idea of the days leading, the week leading up to Purim. And if you do it in the Shabbos before Purim, so that's like Purim's on the horizon, and therefore they're related. But doing it afterwards, if Purim is done, when you're done with Purim, you're done with Purim. I mean, maybe some people are hungover, but basically it's over. Purim's over. So now you can't, if you then, the next day, read Zachar, well, it doesn't have, I mean, in time it's kind of close, but there's no, it's over. There's no connection. Now you're just not remembering it. Right? But Shmuel argues like this, and this is your point about Shushan Purim, is if we have Purim on Friday, and in the walled cities they have Purim on Shabbos, and now we read Zachar on Shabbos, that's not after Purim. Because even for us, Purim is a two-day holiday. It's true, we celebrate the 14th and they celebrate the 15th. But if after all, it is a two-day holiday. We don't say Tachmon, for example, on Shushan Purim. So we're just not celebrating it, but they're celebrating it. So therefore, even if we read Zachar on the 15th, the Zachar is connected up to the Purim. It's not like if you read it on the 16th or something where it's totally history. So since it's still on the Yemei Purim, so therefore it suffices to create the connection between the Megillah and the Purim and the Zohar. Right? Good?
Are you
going to
finish something?
Yeah, I'm going to go on to something else.
Do you have a quick question. Yeah. Did we once learn with you, I don't remember, and it was in this context, that, like, is it wrong that we're celebrating the murder of another? Like, that I realize we're celebrating the salvation of the Jewish people.
Wow.
But it seems like we're also celebrating
the downfall of
we got the SOB and we murdered him and murdered all of his descendants. Isn't there some concept where we shouldn't really celebrate?
Yeah. So it's interesting. We have that on Pesach, on the day that the Jew that the Mitzrim sank in the sea, splitting the sea. So there's
that's what it is. Yeah, okay.
There's like a muted celebration. You don't say halal, you say half halal. I know.
But why here is it like get wasted, like you've been saying, get hung over, dance and sing?
I know.
Like,
well, that's I that think. Guy. I know. Well, I mean, it could be two things. One thing I'm wondering is maybe Amalek is different, because Amalek is like our tribal and totally philosophically the antithesis of Torah. Maybe we're happy for that. Or maybe, like, I remember Rabbi Chay once had a very nice share. He says the whole idea of feasting on Purim, of getting drunk on Purim, is on the surface, you'd say, not a Jewish idea. It's not the way we celebrate. That's not a Jewish celebration. We don't just get wasted. It's not. On Yom Tov, we don't do that. On Yom Tov, there's a mitzvah to drink, but not to get drunk. It's a drink going. But like here, the mitzvah is arguably to get drunk, to really, you know, seems to be like not a Jewish type of thing. You get drunk, wasted. It's like you don't have your mind, you know. So he said, the reason for the mitzvah is that, see, at the time, it was a political move. This is how the Jews celebrated. Now, why they celebrated, this was politically, there's an idea of a victory party. Like you see at the beginning of the Megillah, Achshverosh made this super-duper victory big party, and you know. And there's an idea, it's like that was a way to celebrate, to show that you vanquished your enemy, now we can drink to our content, there's nothing to worry about, our enemy is dead. You know, and that sent the message. So when the Jews won, they had a show, tell all their enemies, we won, we're victorious, back down. We, you know, they had it's like a method of publicizing and celebrating and thereby vanquishing their enemy by the Jews drinking, having a feast, having a party in the language that the world understood, which is a drinking party. And they all got drunk and they all, that was part of the, that was the manner of celebrating as a method of showing the world, you guys are vanquished. So it was a political value to engage in a sense, in a goyish celebration of a victory party, because that was the political gesture in order to fully undermine the enemy. Okay? Now, our mitzvah is to recreate what happened at that time. To remember it, to recreate it, and therefore, they're masakin, so as a form of publicizing the miracle that happened then, the day was set up in a way that we do exactly what they did. So therefore, we have a mitzvah to have a victory party, even though intrinsically it's not really a thing that we would do. But that was, we're trying to publicize the miracle, and that was part of the miracle that we were able to do that. So what I'm saying is, maybe that would be the case. In theory, we wouldn't be celebrating people's downfall, but politically, that was important. That was important to show, to send the message to the world that we're a force to be reckoned with, and we won. You know, and thereby prevent further anti-Semitic attacks or whatever. You with me?
But did we win because you said it was
what's that?
Divine intervention? Is that what you said?
Well, we won because subtle divine intervention.
Okay.
There was no open miracle, but we won, political, whatever, but there was all the factors winning out, in our favor. Mm-hmm. Maybe akin to like the Six-Day War or something like that, So, divine intervention, but nothing like open miracles. It wasn't that kind of thing, Yeah. Okay, so now, there's another question, which is, what happens if Purim comes out on Shabbos? Okay? The 14th comes out on Shabbos. So what would you say then? When should you read the Megillah? And when should you do Zohar? If Purim comes out on the 14th, So the 14th is on Shabbos, the 15th is on Sunday. Okay?
So what? Are you doing Purim on the 15th?
What?
Are you doing Purim?
They do Purim on the 15th, we do Purim on the 14th. We'll celebrate the 14th
so
Shabbos.
What's the Purim on the 14th?
Oh, so you think everyone would say then do it on the 14th. Because for us, it's on the 14th, it's on the same day. And for the people who are doing it on Sunday, it's the day before, perfect. So it's a one amora. I forget, I think Rahuna. Yeah, he says you're right. Like what you said, everyone would say then you do it on the 14th. Shabbos, if Purim's on Shabbos, so then do the Zohar on that day. Because that's the 14th. And the 15th, guys, you're doing it before, perfect. But Rav Nachman says it's still a machlokas. That even in that case, Rav would say do it the week before. The Shabbos before. So why? So Rashi says, because he holds you always need to be makdimim. Kadesh taktim zechira lasiyah. You have to do the remembrance of Amalek prior to Purim. Not just concurrent, prior. You specifically have to do it prior. So if Purim's out on Shabbos, well then you got to read it the Shabbos before. So the question is why? Why is that important? Why is that necessary? What's the idea of doing it before? We were saying, in both of our ideas, that it's an enhancement of Purim, or it's an enhancement of Zohar, seemingly doing the same day would be great, perfect. Right? But no, he's saying is according to this way of interpreting, Rav is saying that no, it has to be before.
And women are obligated, right?
And what? Megillah or Zohar? Zohar is a question. Some say yes, some say no. It's Machlokas. Men hold the F. And women, you know, men are the women doing it. But Megillah is definitely there. Yeah.
That's interesting because if you would think that they're both sort of so interrelated.
Yes, that's true. But the reason why the Megillah is publicized in the miracle, so the miracle they were says they were saved also. This problem was going to kill them all, so that's why, you know. But Zohar.
That's the very first year I had when.
Oh, really? No, that sounds familiar.
On the Penute.
Yeah. But arguably, Amalek.
When you were still in high school. Right?
Yeah, Amalek is like a call to arms. You could argue it's only for men because it's like to remember them in order to fight them, and you know, so maybe that's the men or the soldiers. Yeah, so what's the logic to say that you have to do the Zohar before Purim?
Well, we said, I thought we.
No, but now you're saying it's specific, can't be on the same day.
Okay.
You have to do it like a week before or whatever. So I was before Purim, not on Purim. Can you think of a problem that would be with doing it on Purim?
Purim is Purim. I guess Purim has its own day.
Okay, good. So you mean it would take away from Purim? But you're just reading it in Shul and, you know, Maftir, it's not super, you know, super duper exciting.
What do you mean, Zohar?
Yeah, Zohar.
Right, no, what I'm saying, but you, like you said, Purim is a whole involved thing, and it's a whole day. Zohar is a thing. That's
not, would it not be enough reflective time?
Oh, on the Zohar or on the Purim?
No, Zohar.
Uh-huh.
That could happen.
Okay, right. Okay, good. Yeah, so I'm thinking something like that, that basically, Zohar is a mitzvah min haTorah. Okay? It's from the Torah to remember Amalek. Purim is a Durabanan based upon Mordechai and Esther and reading the Megillah. Now, according to Rav, maybe he held, you want to reflect the primacy of the Deoraisa. Even though Purim is more exciting and there's a whole book and you could study Haman and all that, bottom line is there's the basis is Amalek, and that's a Deoraisa, that's from the Torah. So it could be he holds that if you can do it on Purim, it's kind of when you come, like, oh yeah, it's Purim, we're celebrating Purim, and oh yeah, also Amalek. It's not also Amalek. Amalek is primary, prior. So he holds that you specifically have to first do Amalek, set down the Deoraisa, the basis of the whole thing, and then on a different day, afterwards, do Amalek, the Megillah, which is secondary, an expression of that primary theme. But he holds that it has to be manifest, if you will, in the structure, that there is a what's primary and what's like an elaboration on the theme. You know, so whereas the others don't hold by this, they just say, no, you just have to juxtapose them and connect the two, and thereby enhance them. He holds that it should be manifest the foundation. With me?
Now,
He holds specifically is you want to make it clear what's the Deoraisa, the basis from the Torah, and what's the rabbis added on. So you do specifically Zachar early, before Purim, not on Purim. If you do it on Purim, we'll make it almost like the Deoraisa is like a detail of Purim. We'll get washed away by the day of Purim, which is the celebratory day, and, you know. No, it should be first. Okay, so coming back now to
our... But what about the walled cities?
They're also going to do it earlier. So as the Shabbos is, Purim's on Shabbos, so the walled city is going to be on Sunday. Awesome. So, right, so you'll basically do it. It'll be earlier for them also. Yeah. Okay, so let me ask you this. So back to the original question. Remember our question was, it says that Hashem showed Moshe on the Luchos. He says he told him the deductions from the Pesukim and the oral law. And then also the mitzvah, which is going to be coming in the future, namely Megillah. And we said, what kind of thing is that? Megillah, you didn't know about Megillah. Right? Megillah was a story which didn't yet even happen. Right? So, maybe you were in a position to answer that now. Does someone want to try? Right, what does it mean to say that Hashem told Moshe about Mikra Megillah? And Mikra Megillah didn't even happen. It's a story which didn't even occur.
Maybe not just the idea that, just like the hatred for the, you know, there's always going to be some kind of hatred for things. So they gave that idea.
Okay. Okay, good.
That's all. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Didn't, in Parsha Zachar, was the entire lineage of Amalek killed? Did the Jews at that point?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I mean, at that time in Mashiach, I don't think so.
And that is in the Torah. I'm not able to totally connect it, but I guess what I'm thinking is if it wasn't that the Jews wiped out I forgot what we used before.
Anti-Semite. Amalek.
You said something different. That Purim, that the story of Purim or Megillas Esther rather, is one example of something in the future that could happen, like the Holocaust or anything else.
Right.
If on the other hand, Parsha Zachar made clear like every enemy of the Jew is forever wiped out, then I wouldn't be able to understand why would you, you know.
Understood. Okay, good. Yeah. No. Yeah. Huh?
Maybe another, you could also say it's just show emotion, you have this institution of Rabbanon that could be, you know, it's not per se Mikra Megillah, but you know, you have these Rabbanon mitzvahs that are possible with the Deoraisa system.
Okay, good. Okay, so let me put together what you guys are saying. Okay. In other words, the mitzvah Deoraisa in the Torah is Zahar. Remember Amalek. Okay? But Amalek is not a one-time phenomenon. It's a one-hit wonder. It's not over. In fact, the Torah says there's going to be a battle every generation until Mashiach. There's going to be a battle between Hashem and Amalek. Okay? Amalek is like a constant part of the world. And there's always going to be a battle of Amalek. Now, there's a mitzvah to remember it. But the mitzvah to remember it is accomplished from the Torah through Parsha Zachar. But Parsha Zachar is not a very, very good reminder for most people. But that's all you got, because in the Torah, that's all that there was. There's no event. There's no other event to read. So what it's saying is that it's like the mitzvah was given in a way that lent itself to being expanded upon by the Rabbanan. Now, they knew, Hashem knew, and he told the Moshe, this is going to be a constant thing. Throughout history, there are going to be Amaleks. There's going to be Hamans, there's going to be Nazis, there's going to be people in the world who are totally on the path to destroy the Jews. And there will be a time, presumably there will be an event which will embody the character of Amalek in a very great way. And at that time, there will become a mitzvah to embellish the Oraisa, the Menat Torah mitzvah of remembering Amalek, through reading about that guy, through reading about the Mikra Megillah. So it's like he didn't know Mikra Megillah itself, because the Megillah story in particular. But he knew that the mitzvah of remembering Amalek would be realized through a higher form, Midr Avam. And that was revealed to him. He understood that the Torah in its current form was in a certain sense limited by the historicity of it, which was available to it at the time. And therefore, it's like, he didn't know the particular, but it's like, it was built into the Torah that it would be, the mitzvah would be expanded by Mikra Megillah. So it's like, Megillah is almost like the realization, even though, so when they run it, when Mordechai Nesser set up Mikra Megillah, it was like a realization of that which was already built into the Torah. Now in fact, there's a Gemara in the Bavli and in the Yerushalmi, which basically says when they were setting up Mikra Megillah, the Rabbanan were saying to Mordechai and Esther, it says it's open in the Torah that you're not allowed to make up new mitzvahs. And here it is, and we could protect, set up fences, but to make up a new mitzvah, how do you make up a new mitzvah? Right? Or how do you write a new book in Tanakh? Where is the basis for this? So they were having a hard time, they were working, they were trying to work it out. And eventually they came to the Pasuk in the Torah, which says, Ksov Zosi Karam Ba'Sefer. It says, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, write this down, remembrance, in a Sefer, and pass it down. Write about Amalek in a Sefer. And they say that's an allusion to the Mikra Megillah. So basically, the Gemara is saying is that there's an allusion in the Torah that there will be a time where we'll be writing a Sefer, which will embody the idea of Amalek.
Is that the only, like, what about
Megillah? Other verses? Well, those aren't mitzvahs. Those are, they're books of Tanakh, but there's no mitzvah to read them. I mean, there's a minhag to read them, but it's a custom. It's like Sfaradim, for instance, I don't think read them. I don't think. They just, you learn them. They're part of the, you know, but the mitzvah of Mikra Megillah is like a codified, like a, you know, has a real status of a mitzvah.
And who was the rabbinical body that made these Durabanan? This was the...
At the time, it was Mordechai and Esther and Sanhedrin. Yeah, Mordechai and Esther were part of it, but, you know,
okay, Mordechai... So there's no... There's never going to be another Durabanan.
I mean, at the time, Mashiach was in the land.
Because you just would think, like, the most... To me, the most glaring and, you know, egregious example of all, like, right, was the Holocaust.
Right.
And you sure think, like, on Yom HaShoah or something like that, there should be some sort
right
of universal fast day, right, or something.
Right. You're right. I guess
there's no authoritative body, yeah, to institute that, right?
Correct. Correct.
And it would be wrong, like, if the Rabbinical Association of whatever it's called, the RIA, whatever, is there no authorization to do things like that? Like, would that actually be anti-Torah for today,
right,
the non-Sanhedrin Rebellion to say?
Right. Right. Well, you know what the Rav said? Rabbi Soloveitchik, he said that Tisha B'Av is a day which is dedicated to celebrating, commemorating tragedy, Jewish destruction throughout the ages. And you see in the keynotes that we say, they're talking about the destruction of the Mikdash, but they're talking about the Crusades, and there are ones which were written specifically for the Holocaust. So he said, I think the Rav was against having a special Yom HaShoah. He said, Tisha B'Av is the day where we commemorate all tragedy throughout. It's not only for the Beis Hamikdash, the temple is being destroyed, but it's for all Jews, you know.
That's pretty nice. That's good. That's why, for keynotes, like, I don't get anything out of that. I'm embarrassed that. I just don't.
Right.
Without, what's that?
No, neither do I.
No, I mean, without knowing what you just said is very meaningful.
Yeah, right. That's why if you look through in English, sometimes there are ones about the Crusade. There are different ones with the commentary on the bottom. And if you don't get anything out of this, it's worth the rich reading in English, or the Holocaust ones. I mean, they have, you know, throughout the, you know.
No, I don't mean, just because it's Hebrew. I mean, I didn't even know when the keynotes really work.
Yeah, okay, so that's what
the answer is. Other than it's the thing you do.
Yeah, so
it would be a thing to do Holocaust stuff on that day.
Yeah.
Read books or watch movies or whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's never appropriate.
That's true. People do in the world.
Right.
In the world, people do.
Sure,
exactly. That's what I've said. He said that's that. Yep.
By the way, you ever? I have Optimum now. I switch from FiOS.
Right.
You ever watch Channel 100? KBS.